Welcome to another episode of Good Aaron Watson. This is your host, Aaron Watson. Before I introduce today's guest, I just need to say yet another thank you to the awesome folks out there listening to this podcast. The most recent episode, episode 24 with Michael Batnick, was far and away the most popular episode of the history of the show. More than doubled what we've done in any previous episode. So for those of you out there who are listening to their second episode because they like that one, thanks for sticking around. For those of you who haven't checked it out, we interviewed Michael Batnick. Despite some questionable sound quality, Michael really dropped some knowledge about investing, personal finance, and just making good decisions with your money. Also caught a couple more 5-star ratings on the iTunes store. If you've been enjoying the show or enjoyed today's episode, I encourage you and would really be thankful if you took the time to go leave a 5-star rating and review. Really supports the show, helps us continue to climb the algorithms so that I can reach more people and share these interviews with more minds. Today's guest is Evan Lepler. Evan has quickly risen to become the voice of Ultimate, running the ESPN broadcasts for the American Ultimate Disc League, along with USA Ultimate's college and club championships. We talked about how he got started and talked about some of his predictions for the upcoming club national championships. Evan was a great guy, gave me a lot of his time, was very generous. So I am very happy and thankful to introduce Evan Lepler. Evan, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Aaron, thank you. It's a pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm pretty jealous that you are coming back from a little vacation to Hong Kong. My last trip was to Poolesville, Maryland, where my club season was ended, so that's a little bit less enjoyable.
Yeah, you know, there's part of me that's envious of you for having sort of that club connection and the outlet of competition, and I know how special that is. But yeah, I had a pretty cool opportunity. My sister and brother-in-law live in Hong Kong, and I had a little gap in my schedule and was able to make it work and find a flight that wasn't too crippling, and had a good time. Probably the highlight of the trip was playing in a beach hat ultimate tournament in Hong Kong, which was pretty special. I don't have the competitive outlet like you do as often, so for me, even though it was a hat tournament, I was still out there competing. And you know, in a 12-team tournament, my team went all the way to the final, so I was pretty proud of that.
Congratulations. I'm actually going to be popping my Beach Ultimate Cherry in November at Miami Vice. Never played any Beach Ultimate before, but headed down there with a couple Pittsburgh guys.
Yeah, it's a different game, but it's still fun, and, you know, laying out is just a different thing because you can lay out much more freely without worry about injury, but you also have to worry about, you know, laying out into a face full of sand. So that's a factor. But no, you'll have fun.
You kind of hinted at how busy your schedule's been recently. You've kind of emerged as, quote-unquote, the voice of Ultimate. But I want to start by just really unpacking where this interest in broadcast journalism started. Is this something you knew as a little kid you wanted to do? Did you find it later on? And how did you pursue that passion?
Yeah, I really have known for a long time that I wanted to do this. I think I was really kind of lucky, and you know, I've really been passionate about sports, and I love playing, you know, baseball, basketball, soccer, tennis. Didn't know much about Ultimate until I got to college, but learned to love Ultimate as well. But you know, when I was young, I really loved sports and loved dissecting sports and loved listening to sports and sports talk radio and play-by-play I grew up outside of Boston in Massachusetts and read the excellent Boston Globe sports section every day. So I've known for a long time that I wanted to pursue broadcasting. I mean, I think I was in fourth or fifth grade, and my town community television station used to send out a camera guy to broadcast like the rec league basketball championship game. And I was 8 or 9, maybe I was 10 or 11. I don't remember, but I think that was my first play-by-play opportunity, was, you know, doing fourth grade rec basketball final, and my team didn't make the final. So I was commentating on the sidelines, maybe with my father. He might've been my color analyst. I don't remember. But so it really goes back a long way, and I've continued to pursue it pretty relentlessly since then, both in terms of a little bit of schooling, but also more just, you know, observing people that I respect and connecting with people that I respect and getting my feet wet as much as I can and much experience as I can. In high school, I worked for the, I should say I worked, I volunteered, I didn't get paid, but I volunteered for the town community television station. And by my sophomore year, I was able to broadcast all the boys varsity basketball games for my high school on the town television station. And, you know, my high school wasn't the best team in Massachusetts, but my freshman year they played in the Fleet Center in the state finals or state semifinals. So it was a pretty good team, and people in the town cared, and it was usually kind of a packed house on Friday nights. And the games weren't live, but they would be put on later that Friday night. So if it was a 7 o'clock basketball game, they would usually play it at 9:30 or 10 o'clock on local TV. So that's kind of the first real broadcasting opportunities I've gotten, and I've, you know, pursued it pretty passionately ever since.
I think a lot of Ultimate folks' first experience with you was the first ESPN broadcast of an Ultimate Frisbee game, but you were actually involved with ESPN before that, doing the broadcasting for the Salem Sox. How did you come into that position, or was there anything before that?
Yeah, to say I was working for ESPN with the Salem Sox would not be totally accurate. I've done, you know, a few things with ESPN, and, you know, to put it simply, you know, there's a lot of events that air on ESPN3 that are deals worked out between, you know, ESPN in Bristol and a certain conference or a certain league, and then that league will hire the production company, and then the production company would hire someone like me. So, you know, it's cool to say that I've worked for ESPN for a long time. I still don't really think of myself as working for ESPN. You know, I've obviously done some stuff that they've assigned me from Bristol, Connecticut, but I've never been to Bristol, Connecticut. I don't have a full-time contract with ESPN or anything. Most of my work has been a freelancer. But to answer your question about the Salem Sox, in 2008, I got my first minor league baseball broadcasting opportunity. So I graduated from college in 2007, did a variety of college football, college basketball, studio hosting that fall and winter. I was actually September 1st, 2007, which I kind of look as like my first day job as an adult after I graduated from college. I was in the studio for Appalachian State football in Boone, North Carolina, when they knocked off Michigan. So I was the studio host doing, you know, pregame, halftime, postgame scores for that. But I'll never forget it, and being in Boone and driving around the campus and just seeing people going crazy. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons I'll never forget that day. One of them is I drove home that night, and I got home to watch the last six outs of Clay Buchholz's no-hitter for the Boston Red Sox in his second ever major league start. So those are kind of two events that I've kind of synced in my mind. But anyway, I did minor league baseball for the first time in 2008. I got an opportunity with the Delmarva Shorebirds, South Atlantic League team in Salisbury, Maryland. They were a Baltimore Orioles affiliate, and broadcast a lot of their games and did other stuff for the team. Spent that summer in Salisbury. Actually, totally random sidebar, but when I was in Salisbury, you know, I just finished my college Ultimate career, so I was still pretty passionate about playing when I could, and I wandered onto the Salisbury University campus a couple times and practiced a few times with the Salisbury team. Their captain was Tim Morrill, who now runs Moral Performance and is a pretty big name in the Ultimate world. I ran into him at Club Nationals in 2013 and made eye contact with him and like, how do I know that guy? And then and then later, like a month later, read that he, you know, he wrote something and I read it. And he talked about his time at Salisbury, and I'm like, that's how I know him. I've practiced with him before. Anyway, so that was a cool experience. But I've circumvented your question for quite a while. After that first year in Dalmarva, got the opportunity to go to Salem in 2009, and basically spent 6 summers as the voice of the Salem Red Sox. And that was really cool for me for a number of reasons. It was my first real job as a true number one broadcaster in minor league baseball. I broadcast every single game, and it's a crazy, hectic, overwhelming schedule of 140 games in 150 days. You don't have much of a life outside of minor league baseball if you're working in minor league baseball. I know many people who work in minor league baseball would agree. But, you know, it was special for me because I grew up in Boston, got to work in the Red Sox organization, got to say welcome to Salem Red Sox baseball every night, and, you know, got to become friends with a lot of guys who are on their way up. And, you know, I watch Boston Red Sox games these days, and the team has not had a great year, but they've been pretty good the last month in large part because a lot of my friends have been playing really, really well. So it's changed my perspective a lot on being a fan of Red Sox baseball because, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. was a friend of mine in Salem, Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and Blake Swihart and other guys like that. So I had a pretty cool opportunity to do that, and then it crossed over with Ultimate for 1 year, which was a crazy experience, and I could tell you that story as well if you'd like about how the sort of the Ultimate started. But
absolutely.
Well, in early in the 2013 season, I got an email from a guy named Mike Castaldo, who was an Ultimate player for Ring of Fire in Raleigh, played for the Masters team that won Worlds, Boneyard. And he was a Wake Forest alum. Now, we were never in school together, but I think like he was a senior in college and I was a senior in high school. So when he came back for homecoming that next year, I met him, and he was one of the Frisbee guys. And anyway, stayed in touch with him. Really, really good guy. He lives in London now with his wife, Kristen. They just had a baby. Well, he's the person that emailed me the job posting on USA Ultimate's website about how USA Ultimate seeking color commentator for ESPN broadcast. And this is, you know, early mid-April of 2013. And I had just started baseball season. And as I said, baseball season is just such an all-encompassing, you know, tunnel vision type endeavor that I really didn't think it would be logistically possible. And I think in my first 4 years in Salem, I missed like 3 games in 4 years. And if you think about that, you know, maybe for a couple weddings or stuff like that, and if you think about that, you know, 140 games in a season, 560 games in 4 seasons, I did like 557 out of 560 games. So to leave for all of Memorial Day weekend to do college nationals in 2013, I'm like, I can't do that. That would be crazy. But then I thought about it a little more and, you know, thought about how cool of an opportunity it would be and how much I would love to get back into seeing high-level Ultimate, which I had sort of lost touch with over the previous few years. So I took some time the next day, and you know, it's hard to find time in the afternoon when you're getting ready for a ball game because, you know, I'm responsible for doing the stat packs and the game notes, and I want to be down at batting practice, and I have to fill out my scorebook, and you know, there's just so many different things that you do as a minor league broadcaster other than calling the game at 7 o'clock. But I took some time and wrote an email to Andy Lee with USA Ultimate and just sort of introduce myself and explain who I was and my background with Ultimate. And I think I sent him a clip of some of the basketball play-by-play work I did. That was an ESPN3 broadcast the previous year, and just tried to say, you know, there probably aren't too many people out there that have the broadcasting background and the Ultimate background, you know, give me a chance. Had a great phone conversation with him the very next day, and, you know, was optimistic about it, although I wasn't sure how I would handle it logistically with the baseball team if they offered me the position. And then I didn't hear anything for a few weeks. So I honestly wasn't that concerned about it. It would have been really cool to do it and go to Madison for 2013 College Nationals. But I also was just so tunnel vision in baseball and immersed in that, that I wasn't worried about it. And there was about, you know, a week and a half before College Nationals, and I still hadn't heard anything. And it was literally 9 days before College Nationals started. I was in Zebulon, North Carolina, getting ready for the Salem Red Sox and the Carolina Mudcats. And my phone rang, and it was a Connecticut number that I didn't have on my phone. And it crossed my mind, could this possibly be someone from ESPN? And it was, one of the coordinating producers up there asking if I could be in Madison basically that next week. So this was the Wednesday before, and College Nationals start on the Friday of Memorial Day weekend. So it was a week and 2 days later. And my initial reaction was, this is such an honor. I can't believe you're calling me. I need to figure out a way to make this work. Can I call you back? And they had already waited to not exactly the last minute, but the last week sort of to make this happen. And I called my general manager on my baseball team and told him about it. And I mean, he was very supportive of me. He basically just said, if you can, find a replacement to handle the broadcast for Salem when you're gone, go for it. You know, it's a cool thing for the Salem Red Sox if their play-by-play guy is on ESPNU doing Ultimate Frisbee on that stage. So too late to make a long story short, but I made it work logistically, and I went to Madison and spent, that whole week before the tournament trying as best I could to become as well-versed as I could in Ultimate. Because, when I was in college, I, as I think many, Ultimate players are, was just so in love with Ultimate. And, I mean, this was the day of RSD, Rec Sport Disc, and I'd be, sitting in class with that tab always open, doing a control R, anything new on RSD. Do you know what RSD is?
Yeah, RSD No Spam was still around, I'd say, during the first half of my college career.
This is before RSD No Spam. This was the original RSD, but,
with spam.
Yeah, with plenty of spam, trust me. But, that and the Ulti Village clip of the day, I've talked about some of this stuff before with people. But, so I was obsessed with Ultimate in college. But after college, I had not followed it as closely. I don't know if I could have told you, before I started studying again, who had won the Callahan the previous years, who the top teams were, who had won it all. Just, so trying to place myself back into the context, if anybody goes back and watches the coverage, I'm sure if I talked about something that happened from 2003 to 2007 or maybe 2008, I knew what I was talking about. If I was talking about something that happened from 2009 to 2012, I probably was not quite as sure as what I was talking about, or was relying on a secondhand opinion from somebody else. But it all worked out, and I studied as much as I could and walked around the fields for the first couple of days. And, obviously no one in the world knew who I was at that point. I was just some random guy with a credential wandering around the fields and trying to study as much as I can and talk to some people to learn the lay of the land. And, then we were on the air, and I remember, going on the air with Mike Cousins, and we had a great production crew. I think, because that was ESPN's sort of first foray into the sport, they really put a lot of resources, add in the fact that when it's on ESPNU, it gets more of a personnel package for the production team. So, and we had a couple stage managers, and it just seemed like at that point in my life, it was probably the most complex broadcast production I had been involved in. And I had done some stuff that had been on ESPN3 before, but to be on ESPNU and, my cousins, who I knew a little bit before then and got to know more, that we worked pretty well together and were able to develop a rapport pretty quickly. And we had some good games, and if I remember correctly, it worked out pretty well for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it was a surreal experience because it was the kind of that first widely broadcasted event. So I've been to tournaments since then, and people have brought that up, that was kind of like their first time really seeing, a high-level production of Ultimate Frisbee that we're now, getting regularly with the AUDL and the different productions that come out with the club championships, college championships, it's now a little bit more ubiquitous. But being a part of that first one, and I had teammates who were, we caught them gawking at the cameras, and you kind of had to punch them and, you know, refocus. We're still playing frisbee here. So that was definitely, I think on all ends, it was a surreal experience. I can't imagine what that baptism by fire had to be like, just jumping a week to essentially prep for all these different teams. It's not like, you know, it's not like you're prepping for a football game where you know the two teams well in advance. You know that there's these contenders with these couple, you know, main players, but we don't know who's actually going to be in each semifinal. I'd imagine that was just a ton of work to prepare.
Yeah, that's a challenge for most Ultimate tournaments that we've done, especially because, you know, you wait on that Saturday for U.S. Open and Club Nationals for that Sunday during Memorial Day weekend. You know, you wake up that Sunday morning for the 8:30 a.m. quarterfinal round. And so you have, you know, 16 teams that are getting set to play, and you're on the air at noon for a quadruple header. That's a tough dynamic, you know, tough even if I've been immersed in the sport for a few years and have a pretty good sense of what the teams are. You know, during that day, it was pretty nuts. I remember, you know, you prepare for as many teams as you possibly can, but there's so many different teams and so many players and so many storylines. You know, I don't really have a horse in the race in terms of who wins or loses, but in the past, I've definitely found myself sort of hoping that the team that I prepared for more wins in the quarterfinals. And I think that's, you know, a common thing for a lot of broadcasters, but, you know, one story I can tell is, you know, and this is, you're not going to like this story, but, you know, in 2014, I felt like I had a really good grasp on the Pittsburgh team. And, you know, had spent a lot of time on the sidelines with Nick Kaczmarek, your head coach at Nationals, and remember, you know, sitting with him during the UNC Wilmington Harvard pre-quarters game, you know, talking with him about Pitt, getting sort of his scouting reports and seeing how he studies ultimate and prepares, and thought I had all these cool stories to tell. And as obviously, you know, and most ultimate people know, one of the most shocking results of the season unfolded, and it didn't work out for Pitt. And I had, you know, 25 minutes to prepare for UNC Wilmington because all of a sudden they were in the semifinals. And UNC Wilmington is a team that I had a lot of battles with when I was in college. And, you know, they used to get on my nerves a lot. So that was also a reason why I didn't want them to win. But as time has gone on, I've gotten to know some of those guys. And, you know, even guys who got me upset in college, I've become friendly with now. So that's one of the cool things about the Ultimate World is, you know, typically the more you get to know people, even if they've given you trouble in the past, it usually ends up, most people who are attracted to Ultimate are pretty good people. And I mean, that's been the best part of, you know, the opportunities that I've gotten in Ultimate is just to, you know, sort of jettison in and out of different Ultimate communities all around the country. And I mean, even all around the world. I got to go to Dubai this past March, for Beach Worlds, and, you know, to be able to just converse with different Ultimate players all around the world. So many Ultimate players have such amazing stories about, you know, how they've discovered the game and what they do on the side when they're not playing Ultimate. And, you know, one of the things I say a lot is you talk to a baseball player, oh, how'd you start playing baseball? Oh, I started playing in Little League. That's not a very interesting story. But, you know, every Ultimate player, it seems, has a pretty interesting story. Even if it's as simple as I started my freshman year of college, usually there's a little bit more to it than just that. So it's been really awesome. It's been really special, and I kind of shake my head at the opportunities I've gotten these last few years to broadcast Ultimate. I think I wrote on, like, when I said goodbye to the Salem Red Sox, I wrote, like, I can't call this a dream come true because I never really dreamed that this would be possible. But here we are, and Hopefully, just getting started.
Part of that rise that's happened over the last couple of years has been your involvement with the AUDL. The AUDL has gone from a fledgling first-year league, gone through owners and teams folding, tons of new franchises opening up. And this past year, we had a game of the week every single week for your broadcast with the AUDL. I got to be a part of a couple of those, but what's been most shocking for me is beyond just your broadcasts, the amount of media coverage for the sport itself has absolutely exploded. I kind of can still kind of relate to that feeling of, you know, reading every single article that comes out and every single piece of media, because there really wasn't any even 4 or 5 years ago. But now it's gotten to the point where people say, you know, I read this or I saw this or I saw that, and it's not uncommon that half the people missed it because there's so much coming out that it's really, really hard to stay on top of everything. And I imagine for someone like you, whose job is really to be that knowledgeable voice who can inform audiences, that can be a challenge at times to stay on top of all the information that's out there to collect. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, no, it's a fun challenge for sure. You know, I sort of, before this past AUDL season, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to watch film of every single game in the league from the week before, so I have a total grasp and I know every team inside and out. You know, you sort of realize that the time that goes into, if I tried to watch, you know, 14 2.5-hour games in their entirety and I can't get the footage until Tuesday or Wednesday, that's logistically, mathematically, I don't think there are that many hours in my day, because I do like to get some sleep as well. But in terms of talking to people and exchanging emails with people and, you know, watching all the highlight stuff that Luke Johnson and the video team puts out every week, it is, I mean, obviously with UltiWorld and Skyd and, you know, all the other solid Ultimate medias, it is, the coolest thing about it is how, like, player-centric it is and, you know, how many players are just so forthcoming. Players and coaches both. I mean, it's not universal. There are certainly some more buttoned-up type. But for the most part, you know, I'm a huge Patriots fan growing up in Massachusetts. There aren't too many Bill Belichicks in the Ultimate world that won't tell you anything. I mean, most people will tell you exactly what happened and why they think it happened and how it made them feel and, you know, give you a little anecdote. And, you know, broadcasters, you know, more than anything, aside from just describing the action, they're storytellers. And, you know, if you find a good nugget or a good anecdote, whether it's in an article that someone else wrote or a conversation you've had or just something that you sort of put together statistically from mining through the numbers yourself, you get excited to tell those stories on the air or in, you know, as I did in the Tuesday Toss writing it this year. And that's what's really fun. Now, it's frustrating when you have, like, a great story to tell and either a team doesn't make it or a player is injured and, you know, or whatever. Sometimes I'm on the broadcast and I just completely step on myself when I'm trying to, you know, weave in a story, and I'll listen back and be like, oh, I screwed that one up in a big way. But, you know, I'm still very much trying to get better at this myself every single day and, you know that I am far from an unfinished product as a broadcaster and have a lot of improvement to make myself. So that's something I try to work on too.
Absolutely. And I one of the things I definitely wanted to compliment you on is your production of the Tuesday Toss every week during the AUDL season. I had multiple people, we had discussions about your ability to produce, it was like 8,000 words on a weekly basis, and how the hell did you do that when you were also traveling and prepping for games and all that. So can you briefly kind of go over your writing process or how you go about compiling so many words?
Yeah, I've, you know, read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback for a very long time, and actually when I was in high school, aside from doing all the broadcasting that I did for Sharon Community Television, I also started writing for the Sharon Advocate in Sharon, Massachusetts, and just reported on different high school games for a while, and then I asked if I could start writing a column, and they said, sure, and I started writing the Friday Morning Point Guard, which was supposed to be like the high school basketball edition of the Monday Morning Quarterback. The newspaper came out weekly on Fridays. So, I mean, it's kind of a recycled idea a little bit, but I also thought that in the Ultimate world, there's so many stories to be told, and across the league where there's one game a week, you know, it's similar to the NFL in that situation. And, you know, I kind of knew that it would be long. I had no idea that I would end up writing as much as I had, or as much as I did. But, I think like the first week, I don't remember how many words it was, but it was one of the shorter ones. And I remember sending it to my editors at theaudl.com and being like, yeah, they won't all be this long. I just got excited for first week. And then that was by far the shortest one of the season. Like even the week where there were no games played, I wrote much more than that. As far as what the process is, it really varied by a number of different things. Obviously, from this interview, anybody can tell I'm a verbose person and, you know, certainly at times long-winded. I think that's something I need to work on, both in my writing and my broadcasting, is my concision. But over the course of the season, you know, sometimes I would, you know, fly back Saturday night or Sunday morning back home to North Carolina. Other times I might, you know, there was a couple weekends where I would spend the weekend, and I spent a weekend with Toronto and my parents, with my parents, so I didn't leave till like Monday night. So it really varied. But, you know, I tried to email, phone, texts a lot of different people over the course of the weekend, Saturday night, Sunday, Monday. And then, you know, once you, if people respond in a timely fashion, which, you know, didn't always happen, but happened a lot, and, you know, people give me all the credit in the world for this, but the reality is, like, if Ultimate players weren't as forthcoming and eager to tell their stories, I would not have much to write about. But, you know, once you have sort of all the comments and feedback and have sort of been brainstorming my opinions, I don't have like a consistent, I didn't have a consistent timetable. There were times when I would like be up all night Monday night writing and go to bed at 6 a.m. There were times when I would start writing it sort of, you know, during the day on Monday, and then just like be tired and be like, okay, I'll wake up in the morning, Tuesday morning, and finish it. So one thing I need to do next year is get on more of a defined schedule. But I think, you know, the reason I did the Tuesday toss instead of like, I don't know, the Monday whatever is so I'd have a little bit extra time to get it produced. But it probably helped
you maintain your sanity also.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just the travel aspect of it, like, you know, it's hard to be really thoughtful on an airplane while you're writing in a middle seat. But it was a labor of love. I really enjoyed it. I really felt like there was a spot for it in the Ultimate community. And, you know, I've heard criticisms that it's too long, and part of me thinks it is too. And Chuck Kindred, who I work with, he's like, dude, the Tuesday toss, it's so good, but I just can't get through it all. It's too long, man. Like, cut half of it out or release it in segments. And I'm like, well, you know, if you feel that way, Chuck, you don't have to read the whole thing. That's fine. But I am someone who always enjoyed reading long-form stuff. And, you know, I haven't read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback from week one yet, but I'm looking forward to perhaps reading that after I get off the phone with you. And it may not be for everybody, but I think there are a lot of people in the Ultimate community who hopefully enjoy it, and hopefully I can do that for a long time as well.
So regionals just wrapped up this past weekend. We don't have any pool formats yet. We don't know matchups. We don't really know anything other than the teams that have qualified for nationals. Knowing that I'm sure you're going to do a ton of research before you actually show up in Frisco to actually, you know, prepare for these different matchups, do you have any predictions or exciting storylines that you're really interested in digging a little deeper into?
Obviously there are a bunch. You know, I'm really curious to learn about this Michigan High Five team. They have certainly made some impressive statements with their play. I've watched a few of their games that UltiWorld has posted. UltiWorld's done an unbelievable job just having sort of this treasure trove of club footage. I was in Hong Kong one night. We had gotten back from like a full day trip. We were exhausted, didn't want to do anything, and I just watched a couple of club games over there. I'm like, well, here's the best part. I told my brother-in-law, I'm like, I'm going to do a little work now, and my work was watching Bravo and High Five. Isn't that awesome?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of stories. I mean, like, it's hard not to think Revolver's a heavy favorite in the men's side, just from what they've done over the course of the past half decade. But again, you know, you would say that Pittsburgh was a heavy favorite in college the last couple of years, and you know, crazy things happen in this format of a tournament. When you have one bad game, that you're at the mercy of a 175 grand piece of plastic. Who knows what the wind will be like? You know, teams come out firing and have all sorts of crazy bounces. So, I mean, it was interesting following regionals this past weekend. I was curious how the Southeast and the Northeast, I felt like, were the most interesting. You could put your guys' regional in there too, but it felt like there were, where there was three teams for only two spots, and there's a really good team not at nationals. I mean, I think the three teams that in the men's division that were in nationals last year that aren't going back this year are Pony from New York and Temper from Pittsburgh and Chain Lightning from Atlanta. And, those three teams all kind of got squeezed by the three for two, and teams earned their way there. So I'm curious to see what Florida United can do. It's interesting because, as you and I both know, there's been sort of this schism between pro and club ultimate. And I think that sort of disconnect is gradually fading by the day in terms of players and being able to care about both or whatever it may be. And, I've talked with some of the Florida United guys about how, it was really the AUDL that kind of brought them together and finally united all the best talent in that area. And that sort of goes with the team name. But, the Jacksonville Cannons had a pretty special year. They probably should have made it to the championship weekend and won the South Division and ultimately fell short in a crazy overtime game. But I think, the question, can Florida United, make an impact at Nationals? They did not really do that last year, but they're certainly better this year than they are last year. I'm curious what Madison Club will do at Nationals. I think a lot of people have sort of wondered, why are the Madison Radicals so good in the AUDL, but Madison Club has not been too much of a factor? Well, Madison Club just won their region over a couple teams that were in Nationals last year in Sub-Zero and Prairie Fire. And, I think that would it be shocking if Madison Club went from not making Nationals the year before to making the semifinals? Yeah, I think people would be pretty shocked, but who knows? So there are a lot of really cool storylines. I mean, there's all the top teams I haven't even mentioned. Well, Bravo do, missing a lot of the pieces from last year, but they're still good. Double Wide, obviously, can they recapture the 2012 form? Boston, a very different team from last year, but still really good. Toronto has won a lot of big games. So it's just a few weeks away, and I will certainly know more in a few weeks than I do now. And, I mean, we're just talking men's ultimate right now, but I also follow the women's and mixed regions as much as I can. And, I think there's interesting storylines in all of those. Each of the top 5-6 women's teams, it wouldn't surprise me if they won. Mixed, you never know. Teams will come from being one of the lower seeds in the tournament and then, come together at the right time. So it's really cool. It is surreal to me that I get to be the guy that goes to wander around the sidelines for a couple of days and then get to share my opinions and analyze it and just sort of have a front row seat, all expenses paid, to watch this all unfold. So it's, again, it's pretty special, and I'm very grateful and don't really know how it happened, but hope I can do it for a long time.
I totally echo your sentiment, and just really my interest is very piqued to see how the semis of all the divisions shake out, particularly having played in the open division, seeing if, High Five or Truck Stop or some of these, very, very talented teams can kind of break into that upper tier that's been occupied by the Bravo, Double Wide, Revolver, teams like that. If someone can go on a run the way Ring of Fire did last year.
Yeah.
Also, just some of the transplants who went over to Molly Brown from Scandal. You got Opie, you got other players like that, just seeing how that affects the power balance and if it's just going to be another team from the West taking care of business, or if some of the power can head towards the middle or the east side of the country.
Yeah, and if, you know, on the women's side, it'll probably be the second straight year that Boston will be the number one seed going into Nationals. The seeding hasn't come out. Seeding doesn't matter a whole lot, but, you know, that's, you know, can they put it together? Let me ask you, who is the best team that you played against this year, do you think?
It's really tough to say, because when we played at the U.S. Open, we saw GOAT when they were missing some people. We saw Boston in a pretty – Boston and Revolver both with pretty full rosters. We never saw Bravo. We never saw Double Wide. Revolver looked very, very, very good, but we were playing them in an incredibly upwind, downwind game. So it's hard to know how that translates to a not-so-windy game, but at the same time, they've been just as dominant in the non-windy situations. To me, they're definitely a tier above everyone else. It's Revolver and the rest from where I'm standing.
Yeah, their depth is just so impressive. And, I mean, so many guys on their team, you know, probably aren't known to the general Ultimate fan. Just, you know, sort of their defensive army. And but, you know, a lot of guys that played in the AUDL that have gotten to be more well-known, and guys who have, you know, played mixed. And they're fun to watch, despite the fact that, like, their head coach Mike Payne says, our goal is to play boring Ultimate, because, you know, coaches want their teams to be conservative and you know, take care of the disc. But they're not boring at all with the way they play defense and the way that, you know, their playmakers like Higgins and Cohen and Cassidy and Christian and obviously Bo when he's healthy make plays, and, you know, Lucas Dahlman, a young defender. I feel like I could talk about everyone on their team right now. Yeah. This is not a Revolver podcast, so I'll cut it off there. But
I'll hit one quick anecdote from our game that just kind of blew me away and made our team aware that there's a whole another level that we have to work towards, striving towards. It was a very upwind, downwind game, and we're probably talking like a 15-ish mile per hour wind, upwind, downwind. And we had some sort of turnover where going downwind, it kind of rolled out the back of the end zone, and their swing pass got doinked, and they caught it in the back half of their own end zone. And where a lot of other teams would have, you know, tried to punt it or just force something down the field so you're not at major risk of throwing a Callahan, they threw four or five consecutive swings, just casual resets, waiting for their opportunity, and worked it almost all the way up to our midfield before taking a shot into the end zone. And, you know, you can probably blame our defense partially for our inability to put more pressure on them, but that was completely mind-boggling for me, that you could have so much confidence in your defensive line handler's touch on the disc to be able to just casually swing it back and forth in that wind inside your own end zone was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm guessing, you know, maybe Eli Kearns was involved, or
yep.
Jordan Jeffrey or Taylor Leahy, and, I mean, guys that, you know, don't play O-line for them, but could be, you know, top handlers on any other team, could be primary center handlers, you know, perhaps for some other Nationals caliber teams.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. So I've got two kind of fun questions here before I wrap things up with a personal challenge for the audience. The first one is, when Ultimate Frisbee is in the Olympics in 2024, and you're in the broadcast booth, what two people do you want in the booth with you announcing that game?
Wow. That's something I have not thought about at all. But I'm sure I'm going to forget someone great. Honestly, the first two people I thought of were Dutchie, Alex Gestier, and Lou Burris. I think, you know, Alex Gestier played for Revolver, coached Revolver, coaches Scandal, has won championships. and is certainly, you know, one of the top thinkers in the game, you know, and Lou is a character's character and, you know, one of the most unique men in Ultimate, but brilliant and thoughtful. And I think, you know, if I could work with those two people, I don't really feel like I would need to do much. I would just sort of let them talk Ultimate, maybe occasionally ask them a question. So that, I mean, those are the first two people that came to mind. And I mean, man, now you've got me like excited. I'm like, okay, 9 years from now, do I actually get to do this? It would be amazing. I don't know if Ultimate will be in the Olympics in 2024. I don't think anybody does, but that would be pretty cool.
Absolutely a fun hypothetical. Another, maybe slightly less fun hypothetical, is your Save the World team. So what your Save the World team is aliens come down similar to...
Sure.
Space Jam. Similar to Space Jam, and you have to pick your dream team of seven. This is going to be a mixed team, so it's going to be four guys, three girls, and these seven have to play a game to save humanity. What seven people, you can make anyone healthy, but it's as they are right now. Who are you putting in for your dream seven?
Wow. You know, like, this is something that if I was going to write about, I would take weeks to think about it. So the fact that, man, so four guys and three girls. And so the game is happening tomorrow. And presuming that everybody is healthy.
You can fix Mark Lloyd's knee.
I mean, is it like a universe point situation, or are we playing Savage?
It's going to be a Savage game to five.
Savage. So I mean, not that I would pick anybody without conditioning, but holy cow. So, I mean, if I just start naming, like, the best guys in the world, I think I would want to, you know, craft a team, obviously, with those guys, but I also... thinking about it more, would think about different roles and what you're relying on for people to do. So, I mean, I think your teammate Tyler DiGirolamo is on that team. I think I want him on there. I think, man, Savage 7, because you're thinking about offense and defense too.
It's tough.
It is. Funny. I mean, I think, like, you know, I've talked incessantly about Bo through the years, and I don't think there's anybody better, but I also think that in this situation, I mean, not that he's going to lose, but like, I was thinking about, do I want Bo and Ashlyn or just Bo? And I think I would have trust in Ashlyn handling the disc.
Absolutely.
More than just about anybody. And I really shouldn't think about this so much. Let's say
trust the gut.
Let's say, like, well, because I mean, I love the question, Aaron, and I've been a longtime reader of Bill Simmons since before he was, you know, an ESPN employee, and when he was the Boston sports guy. And I mean, this is something that he's talked about, like the basket. You know, I want 86 Bird and 12 LeBron, and you know what, you know, picking a specific year of a specific player. So I mean, I think Mark Lloyd is in that conversation. Take like 2014 Mark Lloyd, or if we assume he's healthy. And humanity is at stake too. That's what makes this so tough.
Yeah.
So let's just say we got Tyler, we got Ashlyn, we got Mark Lloyd, and let's say Kurt Gibson, even though I haven't seen Kurt play in a while, but I trust he's up there. And like
we know he's healthy, because that's the one power you got.
Yeah. And for the three women, man, this is tough. That's what's interesting in the women's game right now. Like, I think if you like walked around nationals and asked like who's the best player in the women's game, I don't think there's like a clear, obvious choice. I mean, Sandy Jorgensen probably has to be in there just because of her size and speed and skills. I really trust Anna Nazaroff with the disc. I think that, I mean, watching her clutch performance at Beach Worlds in person and just how she's been the motor of Fury for a long time. You know, you could pick three players from any of Fury or Riot or Molly Brown or Scandal or Brute. And Part of me almost has to feel like I have to pick someone like who's not on Fury and not on Scandal just to try to even it out. But you know what? I'm just gonna say this because I like her too. Let's throw Georgia Bosher on that team. From Madison, she's really incredible. She hasn't played on the top teams club wise, but she's been on USA World Games team. So I'll take that seven with Tyler DiGirolamo and Mark Lloyd and Ashlyn Joy and Kurt Gibson and Sandy Jorgensen and Anna Nazaroff and Georgia Bosher. What do you think?
I like it. I think we've got a good chance.
Is humanity saved?
I hope so. Thank you for entertaining my silly question.
No, trust me. I'm going to be thinking about this for hours after we get off.
Perfect. If you want to submit a revised one, and maybe after Club Nationals, we can revisit this and maybe put a blog post together or something.
Cool. And you know, I mean, this would be a fascinating thread on Reddit or UltiWorld or Skyd or whatever. And I feel like, I mean, you could name seven that I didn't name and, you know, put a pretty incredible game together. So.
Absolutely. Before we give you the mic one last time to issue a personal challenge to the audience, if people want to connect with you, either give you a crap about the team you selected or ask you questions, anything like that, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I read all my Twitter mentions, so my Twitter handle at Evan Leppler. People want to email audlmailbag@gmail.com. I check regularly as well. So, or just find me on the sidelines in Frisco. It's awesome talking to people throughout the community. So I don't be a stranger.
So now I'm going to give you the mic to issue a personal challenge to the audience.
If I'm issuing an Ultimate-related challenge to people in the Ultimate community, which I imagine are most of the people listening to this, I mean, I think the biggest hurdle we as a community have and continue to have is just to, you know, gradually expose the game to more and more people. So if you're listening out there and you care about Ultimate and want to see it grow and want to see it get more coverage and more money involved and sponsors, I mean, we just need to widen our community. And there's something cool about the fact that our community is, you know, kind of small and so devoted and diehard and hardcore and everything. But, I mean, I guess my challenge would be to try to expose Ultimate to as many people as you can. And whether that is, you know, picking a different person each day or each week or a group of people and sending them a YouTube clip or suggesting they watch a broadcast on ESPN and or having them come out to a local summer league or to watch regionals or whatever it may be. I mean, I think as a community, we've done a pretty good job with this, especially over the past couple of years, is what we talked about earlier, and the just sort of the explosion of Ultimate content. And, you know, more and more, when the IOC WIFDIF Olympic news came out, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, Time Magazine, all had articles about Ultimate. And whenever something like that happens, people will see Ultimate who have never noticed it before. So, you know, there's still a lot of people in the world that aren't familiar with our awesome sport. And I think that's something that anybody could do, is just try to expose it to more people as much as they can.
What was actually pretty funny was I had, like, you know, aunts, uncles, kind of like secondary folks in social network seeing that New Yorker article or the New York Times article and sending it to me as if, like, I didn't know that it was happening. I was like, yeah, I heard about that. Thank you very much. Very excited.
Same exact thing happened to me, like a, you know, third cousin or great uncle. And, oh, they sent it to my parents. I bet you Evan will be interested to hear about this. I'm like, yeah, thanks. I saw it when it came out on Twitter a week and a half ago. But you know, that's the kind of stuff, like, people, you know, like to disagree with how a certain sports center anchor might present Ultimate on a top 10. But anytime it's on there, it raises awareness from people who see it. And even if 95% of the people are like, oh, this looks dumb, Well, 5% of the people might not think it's dumb. And if 1% of that 5% goes to Google it or looks for more highlights, that's, you know, the gradual expansion of the community. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to a point when me and Lou and Dutchie are broadcasting the Olympics in 2024 or 2044 or whatever it is, that, you know, people in the world won't be like, oh, what is ultimate? Ultimate's not a sport. They'll be like, oh, yeah, I wish I had found this sooner. I mean, that's how I feel, especially when I go to an AUDL game and go to see the kids in Seattle who are 18 years old and throwing these like full field flicks. I'm like, man, if I had discovered this game as a middle schooler, maybe I would, you know, still be playing at a high level instead of commentating, even though I'm thrilled to be where I am. But, you know, I wish I had found it sooner, and hopefully more and more people can realize how awesome Ultimate is.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, Evan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, buddy.
Aaron, thank you. It's been fun.
Evan Lepler, thanks again, Evan, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. I learned a lot from just Evan's story of how he ended up becoming the play-by-play broadcaster for that USA Ultimate event. Really gives a lot of perspective on how long it can take before the, you know, right opportunity comes across, that kind of life-changing opportunity comes across your plate. So that's something I'm going to definitely take away from today's episode. I'm sure that Evan's opinions on his State of the World team and maybe also the folks that he wanted to bring in the broadcast booth with him when the sport of ultimate frisbee eventually gets into the Olympics may be a little controversial. So this will be posted on Reddit. There will also be a comment section in the show notes of this episode, so you can chime in there with your opinions and let both me and Evan know what you think of everything. You can also engage with us on Twitter. As always, I'm at AaronWatson59 on Twitter. But once again, I just want to thank you for continuing to listen. If you're still here and you have not left a rating or review and not subscribed to the show yet, I would really encourage you to do that. It's something that's very helpful for me. The game that I'm playing right now is just trying to slowly climb the algorithms of the iTunes library, other platforms out there like Stitcher and the like. And what's really cool is in the last week or two, I've unseated a country music star by the name of Aaron Watson from the podcast section of iTunes. So now if you search Aaron Watson on iTunes, my podcast is going to show up if you're in the podcast section. Now if you're in the country music section, you're not going to find me. I'm sorry. But that's kind of the first step, is claiming the name. Then we'll claim tags like Ultimate Frisbee, entrepreneurship, lifestyle design, the names of some of the specific guests that come on. So someone searches Evan Lepler, someone searches Nathan Chan, their specific episodes will pop up to the top. And that's really just driven by the algorithm seeing that episodes are getting lots of downloads, that the show itself is highly rated, that it has reviews, that it is something that people are interacting with and sharing. So I'm so, so thankful for everyone out there who is helping the show in that way. And if you haven't done so already, I'd really appreciate you taking the time. If you've done all those things and you are still listening in the 59th minute of the show, the last thing I'd ask you to do is that if you enjoyed this episode and you know anyone out there who has an interest in broadcast journalism or an interest in Ultimate Frisbee video productions, that you share this episode with them, shoot them an email, and CC me on that email at goingdeeparon@gmail.com. That's goingdeeparon@gmail.com. I will respond and send you a personal thank you for doing that.